Hi there. It's 2023 and the whole Dyslexic Society has a new venture. We are holding a live chat called Come to the Dyslexic Table every month on the first of the month. And then we are making a podcast from that recording. And the first one we'd like to welcome you to is a podcast on time blindness. We have Sharon Roberts here from Ontario. We have Paddy Carson from Edmonton. Laura is on Bowen Island, and she is the wonderful person who organizes us and keeps us literally on time. What we'd like to do today is talk about time and as it affects people who have dyslexia or maybe just learning challenge of some sort. And the short story is that people often don't do well with time. They can be late, they can be early, they can have no concept what time feels like. And Sharon is talking about it being called time blindness. And I would like to ask everybody here to, first of all, give us examples of when they feel challenged by time, when they feel they haven't got enough, or when they have too much, or any examples of how time is a bit of a challenge to you or the people that you work with. Or your family, or your friends.
Well, I'm going back to when my children were still at home, and you have to get them ready for school and get them out and then get to work. And it's not that simple because there's arguments or discussions or hesitations or whatever, or they can't find things and then you're looking around. So that was always a very stressful point in my day, was getting everybody out the door and off to school.
And mine was the exact opposite with Nicholas, because he'd be at school at the end of the day and he would keep saying, "Don't hurry me, don't hurry me." As meanwhile, the school bus has left, the children finished playing in the play, the teachers were going home and the cleaner was moving in. And his whole thing was, "Well, you're hurrying me." And he had no concept that we had been there for half an hour, 45 minutes. His time was even worse than mine.
For me, it was with Lacey, my daughter, being dyslexic. The language around time was so interesting. The tomorrow and yesterday was always, you know, mixed up and confused. And so, but I would know what she was talking about, or the months. Like, what month is it? What does that mean? And so the relationship to time in that way, and what time of year and what time of month, and was it last night or tomorrow night? Or yesterday or today, you know, we kept it very light and fun, and it was not stressful and it didn't impact her life in any way. And really, to this day, as an adult, every once in a while, it'll be like yesterday when she means tomorrow or that sort of thing. So for me, I just always observed that relationship to the language around it and what her concept of time was. Yeah.
I have a new student, not sure if he's dyslexic or just what his problem is just yet. I only see him once a week for an hour. Right now, he's having a hard time just remembering the days of the week in order. And the dad said that even his older siblings are not even named the days of the week. I started Googling activities and whatnot, and that's how I found this webinar today as far as time blindness. And I'm wondering,
I think it's very common, honestly. Sharon, Paddy and I, we work with students who have dyslexia, and we hear wonderful things like, "I think I'll do that yesterday. What did we do tomorrow?" It's fantastic. I just love it. And the very first interview I had booked for a new client, they were at least an hour and a half late. And I thought to myself, hang on a minute, I'm working with dyslexics. I have to expect this. And people tend to be either extremely early and well prepared or extremely late.
Yeah. I was thinking of a client that I had, which was one of the reasons why I wrote the article, and he had no sense of time. We would be working together and he felt like he needed a break every 3 minutes. And I'd say, "Well, in about 15 minutes, without exaggeration, within a minute," he says, "Is the 15 minutes, is it up?" And I can imagine what he does in school, because I've never met anybody with such a poor idea of what time was. Yeah, and that was a challenge.
It's surprising how many time words we use: when and then and now. And then we say things like "hurry up" and "don't be late" and "you've only got 5 minutes." They have no clue what 5 minutes means. I think maybe this might be the right time to introduce the idea that actually nobody even tells us what the meaning of time is. Sharon and Patty and I, we do talks, and very often I say to the teachers, so what does time mean? And most teachers, you find they just tap their watch. And I'm thinking, well, yeah, sure, that's where we measure time. But what is it we're measuring? Would you like us to tell you the meaning of time? What would you think it might be?
The meaning of time? Time is elapsing from one moment to the next, I guess you could say. I haven't really thought about that either.
Nobody does, you're right. And isn't that crazy that we have all these things that time relies on? You know, we have appointments and we have flights to catch and we have all these things that totally rely on us being on time. But honestly, truthfully, I don't ever remember anyone at school telling me what time meant.
I remember studying the idea of time, but not related to time on a watch or time on a calendar meant. And it was never connected to that. It was just, this is what happens.
So this is our definition of time. Time is a measurement of a change in relation to a standard. And what we do with our clients is we ask them what a standard is. And I explain to them that a standard is something that never changes. So obviously, if you're going to compare yourself to someone in terms of height, you can stand back to back with them and you can see who's taller and who's shorter, but you won't know what the actual measurement is unless you stand next to a meter stick. That's the standard that never changes. The point is, the standard when you're talking about time is the Earth's rotation on its axis for a day and the Earth's rotation around the sun for a year. We measure on watches and calendars the different changes that occur during the day. So in other words, you can say, I get up at 8 o'clock, I go to bed at 10 o'clock, and there's your change. And you've measured it on a watch, and then it's in relation to the Earth's rotation on its axis. Hopefully what that does is give a person the concept of what time is, and then you can start adding the words.
I can't really imagine having a life with no sense of time, because everything I do relates to time. Your whole day, like what you're going to do that day, you have to assess how long is it going to take me to make breakfast. And that whole concept, if it's not there, how it really creates a lot of anxiety and worry for people. And I was thinking as well that a big impact is the before and afterwards, because that even deals with behavior, because sometimes these guys get into trouble and they're telling you what happened. They have no sense of time before, saying that that happened earlier. They have no feeling of what happened earlier or knowing of what happened earlier or what's happening after. So those are two biggies that deal with time. I even remember as a child in school, I could read and do okay, but say we had to read a novel. And they would use the word then, where's then and what happened? And then I'd have to go searching how then pertained to that whole subject. Now is probably a trigger for all kids, a word they don't like.
Have you come across challenges with children when they have to do time tests?
Yeah.
I've never really understood the need for those time tests when the children are asked to do so many math questions in a minute. I think they call it the mad minutes or something like that. It doesn't make any sense to me, because some people walk slowly, some people walk fast, some people can eat slowly, some people can eat fast. Why are we meant to do math at the same speed? And I think the problem is that speed is mistaken for automaticity or mastery. And the teachers seem to think that if they can do these questions quickly, then they've totally got it and it's part of them. But some of the children can totally do it. They just need to think about it a little bit more. Or they're just basically a little slower at the processing or the printing.
Just think about this family. They really don't have a schedule outside their home. And so, yeah, beginning to think it must be a really hard thing to teach. Today is Monday. So what about Monday? You know, what do you do? You know, the parents don't go out regularly to work 5 days a week. So you can have a hard time saying, well, dad's home on Saturday and Sunday. So I'm just trying to think about what it must feel like in his shoes.
We do a lot of work with 3D models. We do a lot of work with plasticine clay. What I've suggested to children is make a model for what they normally associate Sunday with. You can jog their memories a little bit, and then they can make the word Sunday. And then on Monday, this often involves help with the parents too, because the child might not know what they're doing on Monday.
Right.
But, oh, well, you have piano practice on Monday. Maybe you do a little clay piano, and then you put Monday next to it. And then Tuesday is hockey, and then you put a little hockey stick and the word Tuesday. And Wednesday, there's a little image for each one. Whatever they can make a model of, they'll have seven little models, and then they'll have the seven words alongside those models. And then I say to them, can you picture the models? Because the chances are they've made these little models. They're going to see the church followed by the piano, followed by the hockey stick, and then whatever goes after that. And they'll probably tell you those models before they'll tell you the days.
Okay.
And then you can ask them next time, try saying model and day. So, church Sunday and piano Monday and then hockey Tuesday. And then ask them to say it without the model and just the days. So Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. I've found that that's been pretty successful. And you can do that with months of the year as well.
Right.
You can make a whole beautiful clay model. Mm-hmm. January, we're all freezing. In February, we're even colder. Mm-hmm. You know, March is bulbs coming out. And April is Easter bunnies. You can go around the whole year with the different models. And again, I would ask them to picture the models first.
Okay.
And then cold, freezing, spring bunnies. And then add the month. Mm-hmm. And then try and go for the words afterwards. Because in our experience, the children will remember the models much easier than the word.
Right. That sounds great.
And there are experiences that everyone finds challenging when it comes to time. We don't have to have this wonderful gift of dyslexia to experience the challenges. For example, daylight saving, leap year, that can be a challenge from the way we feel when the clocks go back. I wonder if I can get away with this visual on the podcast. It's something that showed me how the feeling of time can be different as we get older. So can you imagine the number 8 on its side? And the part in the middle represents now. The loop to one side represents the past, and the loop to the other side represents the future. Now, when you're young, the loop that represents the past is very small, and the loop that represents the future is very large. When you're older, the loop that represents the past is much bigger, and the loop that represents the future is much smaller. And that's why we actually feel time goes faster as we get older, apparently. The trick is to be in the now, right? People spend thousands of dollars trying to be in the now. It's not easy. We spend a lot of time in the past and the future.
My approach is a bit different because I look at it as a straight measurement. I often say it's like we can't go out into the universe and do the actual measurement with a ruler or anything. We have to use these other kinds of measurements. So when it's, let's say 5 minutes has gone by, it's, the earth is rotated on its axis 5 minutes. So they kind of get the connection. This is just measuring. That's all we're doing.
Maybe we could explain that when people have dyslexia, right, when they have dysgraphia, dyscalculia, when they have ADD, ADHD, they're very, very good at disorienting. And what that means is that their reality and their perception are different. So when we're oriented, our reality and our perception are the same. Which means that, say, I'm looking at some text, and my real eyes are looking at the text, and my perception is also looking at the text. But our perception is very good at going off into other places. So I could be looking at the text, but my perception might be thinking, what did I want for dinner? Did I let the cat out? Have I got the washing in? That type of thing. We're all good at doing that. I'm particularly good at driving where my real eyes are looking at the road and my perception is way, way off into some other sort of dream. And then I miss the turning that I should have taken. So we're all very good at doing this, but dyslexics in the broadest sense of the term are particularly good at it. We can alter all our senses except taste. And time is one of those senses that we actually do not perceive correctly if we're in this disoriented state. the work that Patty and Sharon and I do, we are able to give people tools to know that they have correct perception so that they know when they are oriented and they know when they're not. And they quickly learn that it's probably a good idea to be oriented when you want things to be accurate. You can be disoriented when you want to create and play and dream and invent, that type of thing. But there are things that you do need orientation for. And being on time is one of those things, because you need to be able to read the clock. You need to be able to know when you should be somewhere. That's the sort of accuracy thing that requires orientation. So people who have this way of thinking are just particularly good at disorienting. To tell you how strong perception can be, you've probably experienced this. When, say, you're in a car and you're at stoplights and the car next to you rolls forward and you jam your foot on the brake because you feel you're moving, that is a really, really good example of when your perception is way, way stronger than your reality. And it just causes that physical reaction. So we can't ever discount perception.
And I think this is why sometimes we feel time is going very slowly, especially if you're sitting in class and doing something you don't want to do. Seems like that hour will never end. Or if you're really happy and excited about something, it goes by like that. Oh, an hour's gone by? And it's perception contributes towards that. Could I add one more thing about time? Like, the thing is, too, when people have a problem with time as adults, they're viewed as being very rude people because you're a relative that's always late, or you always have to tell that person to be here for 8 o'clock when you know that they don't have to be here till 9. So it's a daily struggle for these people. And it's because of what Sue was saying, this perceptual talent that they have. It is a talent, but it bites them when it comes to time.
Going back to the point you made earlier about language too, what I found confusing, and I still do if my perception is not where I am, is at home we would say it was a quarter to or a quarter past the hour. Mm-hmm. And when I got here and people started saying it's 8:45, that would throw me. I'd have to figure out, okay, are you talking about quarter past or a quarter to? Because that's what I grew up. And I found that very, very confusing. It's like the top of the hour and the bottom of the hour.
What I've found interesting is that when I'm teaching children, literally teaching them to tell time, I ask them if they can count in fives. So we go 5, 10. That's the first step, right? Then I say to them, what does this little hand tell you? And what does this big hand tell you? And that was a big mistake, because for me, the hour hand is the little hand and the minute hand is the big hand, right? But for the child that I was working with, the big hand is fatter. It's shorter and fatter. And so it's the hour hand. And the thin one is sort of smaller because it's thin. And that would be the minute hand for them. So that was a big lesson, just to figure out what we're going to call those different hands, big or little, or that I had completely the wrong hand, according to my student. So it's very interesting how these things can totally mess you up, because if you're a child in school and you're going through this whole time thing, and then, you know, teachers say the little hand and the big hand, and you've got the opposite picture, well, it's never going to work, right? Mm. It's about connecting the pictures to the word and making sure that the picture you have is exactly the same picture they have for that particular word. It's like seconds and minutes and hours and days and weeks. There's nothing to relate them to unless you sort of start at the beginning and you should, you know, you count one and that's the second, and then you can count 60 of those and it's a minute. So it can build up and grow from there. But otherwise, 5 minutes could be 5 hours. There's nothing to relate it to unless you put the meaning behind it.
I remember one time with this girl, this was many years ago, who had a real problem with time. So I had her stand on one foot. I said, how long can you stand on your one foot? I don't know. I can't remember what it was. Let's say it was 30 seconds. I said, do you think you can do it for 30 minutes? I think it dawned on her. Okay, so 30 minutes means it's more than 30 seconds. And she said, no. But it clicked anyway.
I don't even know, actually, to be honest, how it is taught in school.
Well, yeah, I'm working with a second grader right now. And of course, kids have digital clocks everywhere. So like you say, they know what 2:45 is, but they don't understand it's 45 minutes after the hour. I'm an interventionist. So that's what I feel I need to do, is to explain to them what that means, 15 after or 15 minutes before. And right, I don't think it's probably not written in the curriculum. You need to explain this, what before and after means, for instance.
And that's a good point, because sometimes when we're working with a dictionary with the children, right, and we give them a word and we've explained they have to search for the letters, I actually never say, sorry, what's before C or what's after D, that type of thing. I just point, because again, their before and their after and their front and their back are not always the same as mine. And so if they're looking for the letter C and they happen to be in D, I'll just say, well, if you're at D, which way is C? And then they'll just point, which is much, much easier than trying to battle through words like before or after. Very interesting. When you actually figure out how the thinking works, it's very rarely the same as your thinking. You wanted to go through a typical scenario, Sharon.
Let's pretend it's a child. And they get up at 7 o'clock in the morning. They have to catch a bus at 8:15. And so little Billy knows he has to go to school this day. So that's not the problem, but he's got to get ready. And then we're going to say mom's really organized, has his clothes laid out. He goes to his clothes and he gets his shirt and pants on. And then he sees this sparkly thing over in the corner. Oh, well, let me have a look at that. Now, this is when they disorient. Oh, they say, oh, it's that foil thing that makes the noise for the cat. Where's the cat? And off he goes. And this is what happens. 15, 20 minutes have gone by. Mom comes in the door and sees this child is not even dressed yet. So now we have about 45 minutes ready to go. So if they're like me, they get mad. Move it. You know, you only got 45 minutes left. So you supervise that. Then the child is upset. And then you're rushing them over to breakfast. They begin to eat. Then they're dawdling when they're eating. Let's say it's a bowl of cereal and they're stirring it with their spoon and they are imagining all these little things happening in their cereal. And again, they've lost time. It's to the point where they've got 2 minutes to catch the bus. And then they have to get the backpack all ready. And half of the stuff was left behind because they're rushed. Their shoes are untied, end up getting to school in a big mess, forgetting their homework, forgetting all kinds of things. And then that would be a typical morning of one of my guys when they were younger. And the thing is, the dynamic that happens is if there's more than one child, it really becomes an issue of this one child getting just a lot of attention. The parent is getting exasperated. That's what I was thinking of a typical day. So it affects not just the child, but everybody that's around that child.
And they're very good in living in their imagination, because when they're disoriented, right, they go off into their imagination, which is colorful and exciting, and they can put whatever they like into it. And obviously then they're accused of not paying attention and possibly get the ADD label or the ADHD label. Whereas in actual fact, we've found that if you put more meaning behind words that typically don't have a meaning, and time words typically don't have a meaning behind them, then the impetus to go off into this disoriented state is less. If there's more meaning behind the words, then they might stay focused for that little bit longer. In our experience, it's because we use so many words that actually do not have a picture meaning behind them. I call the concrete words desk and table and chair, that type of thing. But when you have words like the and if and of and yet, all those sight words that you come up against at school, they just don't have picture meanings. And that's called our imagination. 217 of them make up half of what we read.
Yeah.
Mostly those dauntless words, the sight words. And then as children get older, you've got all the concepts involved. So I would imagine at least 3/4 of what we read has absolutely no picture meaning behind it. And that's when these kids disorient, because it's like being in a movie theater where the film is breaking every so often. You know, you've got a film for tree, you've got a film for desk and table and chair, but you've got no film for all those little words. And so every time that happens, the film breaks. Nobody's going to stay in a movie theater where the film is breaking all the time, right? They're going to go to the theater where it's just continuous. And that's called our imagination. And that's when they get accused of daydreaming. And frankly, it was our fault because we didn't give them enough meaning to keep them in the movie theater.
I was just writing out a sentence, like a typical sentence you would say to a child. So when you get dressed, then you will eat breakfast. About 60% of those words are those words that Sue was talking about. They could even be trying to listen to you, but they don't get what you're saying.
1/3 of the population have this ability to alter their perception. And so 1/3 of the population are going to have difficulty with all those words, including time words, and they're going to disorient, or they're going to make their own workarounds and their own old solutions, but they're not going to be able to learn the way they were born to learn.
I liked the way you explained that. I thought that was really good.
If I didn't know what I know, and I heard this, I think I would be very mindful when I would talk to a student, what words I used, try to figure out, okay, what is it they didn't get?
As facilitators, we deal with this whole disorientation thing. We give them tools to make sure they can orient, to make sure they can control energy levels. We show them how to relax. So they've got three tools that put them in the right spot for learning. And then we go through the letters of the alphabet just in case they cause confusion. And then we go through the reading exercises. But when we get to the word mastery, we show them how to create models behind words that don't normally have models. So we look up they have a model for the meaning. We look up if they have a model for the meaning. And then you can go into all those concepts. One of the ones I love is the concept of consequence, because that does involve before and after. And most children that I've worked with in North America think all consequences are bad. Because if you don't do this, there's a consequence. When I say to them, it's purely something that happens because something else happens, and there can be good ones, they'd say, no, there's no good ones. Mm-hmm. It's something that you've done wrong and you get punished for it, right? But having a model for the meaning of consequence, you can say to them, well, what happened before and what happened after? And you can point to the parts mm-hmm. of the model that correspond to before and after. You know, when you actually listen to yourself, see, no picture words in that one. We talk in no picture words all the time.
And then you've got your time instructions. When you have finished this task, do this task.
If I were to summarize, I'd say that possibly the biggest challenge with the concept of time is literally not knowing what it means. And when you think about all the time words that we use, they're completely meaningless without knowing what the meaning of time is. Once you have that meaning, you can attach the words to that picture, and then they start to make a little bit more sense. And also, knowing that at least 1/3 of the population have this ability to alter their perception, which does lead to huge talents, but also does lead to these challenges, it's a big issue. It doesn't just affect a few people. And knowing that they can disorient at will, and knowing that nothing is accurate once they've disoriented, it's really important for us to know whether you've got somebody in front of you who is oriented or who isn't oriented, because it's a waste of breath if they've gone somewhere.
I've taught a lot of students with, you know, learning disabilities and dyslexia and whatnot, and I really haven't come across many of them who've had this much confusion with time and language. So this surprises me. And then I guess the other thing is when you talk about perception or disorienting, that's not my training. So I'm not sure how to figure out if the student has disoriented.
You'd probably notice the result of the disorientation, which would be the error.
Okay.
With time, that is an essential skill for life. You know, so even if your little dyslexic child learns how to read or uses a computer or has something read to them, they're still missing stuff to make them successful adults or productive adults. Getting to work on time is very important. Getting to an interview on time is very important. So I think it's an important skill for them to learn, be proactive, managing your life, managing a project, everything. So it's a big deal.
And prioritizing.
Right.
And procrastinating, all these wonderful words.
Yes, I like that.
Well, I think we'll leave it there. And a huge thank you to everybody who joined us for the live chat. And thank you to everybody who's listening to this podcast. And Every month, the whole Dyslexic Society's newsletter will have an article, which we will then discuss at this live chat. The live chat will always be on the first of the following month, and then we will make a podcast from the live chat. We hope that you've enjoyed this. We hope that you will join us for the next one, which is going to be entitled Finding the Invisible Dyslexic. Again, thank you for joining us, and we very much look forward to you joining us for the next podcast. Take care. Bye.